Welcome to Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time. For women who have walked away from faith, the challenges are often overwhelming, isolated, abandoned by family, misunderstood by partners, ostracized by friends, shamed for thinking critically, cursed for speaking out, subdued by the patriarchy. Thank you for joining us today as we provide a platform for women to speak up, to speak out, and to share their stories, because their stories count. Their stories matter. All right, well, here we are, January 2020. First month of a new decade, and I have the extreme pleasure of welcoming Tracy from Godless Mama back to the show. Hey, Tracy.
How are you?
I'm well. And how have you been the last couple months?
Busy, but good.
Busy, but good. That's good. How were your holidays?
They were good. They were pretty low key, which is just how I like it. Way too much food, lots of fudge. That's my thing. I don't do a ton of baking around the holidays, but I do like to make fudge. So my kid and I made a lot of fudge.
What kind of fudge? Pardon me.
Chocolate. We made chocolate mint, which was really good. Pumpkin. I tried pumpkin for the first time.
Wow.
And peanut butter.
Yum.
Yeah.
Very cool. So
I have to give a lot of it away.
Okay. That's good. Otherwise, I would eat every single last bite.
Yeah.
So for you as a heathen, as a non-theist, a non-believer, like what did the holidays look like for you and your family?
The family I have now or the family I grew up in?
The family you have now, you, your hubby, and your daughter, and your extended family.
It is lovely.
Aww.
It is really about, it is about the kiddo. And her very first Christmas, I told my parents, I told people in my family, don't shop for me anymore. I don't want it. I'm not shopping for you anymore. We're all grown-ups. If you need something, you'll buy it. If I need something, I'll buy it. Spend your money on the kid. If you feel like you have to buy something, buy stuff for her, and that's because that's what I'm going to do. And I refuse to travel with her. I spent 38 years showing up at other people's houses because they were the ones with families. And then I had my own kid, and she is going to wake up in her own house on Christmas morning. Aww. That's it. It's just very low key and quiet. And we always, we go to the mall and she picks out something for a child her own age. Aww. And we make a routine of, her doing that. And we do the gingerbread house and the decorating the house. And, it's just the ritual. There's no, and we all talk about how important it is to be generous to other people. And this is why we're making this donation. And this is who we're helping. And making extra effort to be kind. And there's no need for any religious overtones to it. I mean, she knows that it's Jesus's birthday, but she's an atheist, so she doesn't believe in it. And it's funny, this is a little bit of an aside, but and I hope I'm not repeating myself, but when she first told me she was an atheist, it was a couple of years ago, it really stressed me out. because I really didn't want her to just feel like she had to say that because she thought that's what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Or to say it because she wanted to be like mom. I really wanted her to you know, and I, it's okay if you don't feel that way. And to, then she started getting irritated with me. Like, and she's one day she finally said, what do you think? I'm stupid. I'm not smart enough to make up my own mind about what I believe. Aww. No, I do not think that. So I stopped questioning her after that.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. That yeah. is beautiful. How does your hubby deal with that? Like, is he aware of those statements that your daughter has made?
Yeah, he is. And okay. it doesn't seem to bother him that much. Hmm. And I think he understands. I've always said, if you want to take her to church, you know, I don't necessarily object to that. There's an, you know, adorable little church right down the road. Go, feel free if you want to do that. But I'm not going to take her, you know, yeah. I have no need to expose her to it just so she can, you know, I've had people say, oh, you should expose her to it so she can make up her own mind. Mm-hmm. Well, then I'd also have to take her to a mosque and I'd have to take her to a synagogue and,
exactly.
You know, I can't just expose her to one thing. And I said, you know, you're the one who believes. So if you right. want her to expose to it, then that's your responsibility. Yeah. And, you know, he'd rather sleep in on a Sunday morning. So, so it doesn't seem to. I think it bothers my mother-in-law, but it doesn't seem to bother him that much.
Yeah. And do your in-laws live close to you guys?
No.
Okay.
No, they live a couple thousand miles away. So. Okay.
Gotcha. So you're not regularly seeing them over the course of the holidays.
Correct. Yeah. It's an ordeal to have them, which is fine. I'm happy to have them. We can have a house full of people, but there's no way I'm putting her on an airplane on Christmas.
Yeah. And what so do you, why nice. Do you, yeah. Why do you think, Tracy, it is that you developed those deep convictions about giving your child those, I don't know, experiences at home, you know, with making that home life, that situation, that relationship between you and your husband and your daughter be of the utmost importance? And why do you think, or how do you think you developed that desire to make that so?
I think part of it is because I was, you know, I didn't get married until, well, you know, I didn't marry my current husband until I was 35, and I didn't have my daughter until I was 38, and my older sister had a child when she was in her 20s, so usually it was her schedule.
Yeah.
That determined where we went on the holidays, whether it was her mm-hmm. house or my mother's house or, and, you know, I was always just tell me what to bring and where to be and what time and I'll be there. Mm-hmm. And I figured I've been flexible for 38 years.
Yeah.
It's not my daughter's job to be flexible.
Yeah.
And so I just really, I want her to feel like when she's at home, that this is the safest place where she can be.
Aww.
And that, she is the most important person and that I want her to feel special, I guess. It sounds really trite, but, you know, I think at the end of the day, that's kind of what it boils down to, is that I want her to look back and say, it was really nice of my family to really make the holidays about me and making me happy.
Yeah.
And that's, I can, you know, I can hear the chorus of people, because I've been dealing with a lot of people like this on the page for the last week or so. You know, like, oh, you know, she's going to be selfish and self-centered and, you know, that she thinks she's the most important person in the world. There's a big difference between teaching your kids that they're the most important person in the world and that they're the most important person in the world to you.
You, yeah.
Oh. So she knows that distinction. And I want her, I don't ever want her to question that.
Aww.
So, and it's fun. It's cute that it's just, she's very sweet. And as she gets older, she recognizes the thought that's put into some of the gifts that she gets.
Aww.
You know, because we have inside jokes now and, you know, there's all of that stuff. And so, you know, she knows when she opens up, you know, this little button, she knows the inside joke that that refers to, or so she has so much appreciation for the things that she does get.
Hmm.
So it's just very special.
And yeah, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I feel like I sacrificed that for my own kids on the altar of people pleasing, you know, and my family wanting us to be there or meeting other people's expectations, you know. So where I was unable to like stand up for what I believe was in the best interest of my own children. And then I would make the decision, right? My husband and I would choose to go spend time, drive the 7 hours, the 9 hours to family because it was what they expected of us, you know? So I find it extremely beautiful and hugely honorable for you as a mom to be able to put your, and it's so funny because like I would default in saying that I chose my children's best interest, first, right? But then as you're sharing that and the reality that you have put forth for your daughter, you know, it's just interesting. And I'm not saying necessarily that what we chose to do was wrong. It's just, it just causes me to think about that, you know, and my motivations behind why we chose to meet other people's expectations
mm-hmm.
over what may have been in the best interest of our immediate family, you know? Yeah.
Some of that stuff can be so hard to navigate and, you know, family relationships can be really tricky. And I imagine that having the, you know, that there's, you know, also that religious teaching that says, you know, that's family with a capital F and right. It's not just about you. You need to,
right,
you know,
honor your mother, your
mother. Right. Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, interesting, interesting. So while we're on the topic of you being such a fabulous parent to your incredibly amazing daughter.
She is incredibly amazing.
In our first conversation, you alluded to the fact that she at age 11 kind of fell into the LGBTQ category. So 11 seems young to me, right? To already be able to identify, but that probably just shows my naivete.
She actually was 10.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
So, cause it happened, had to be at least a year ago, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I really do. This was a proud parenting moment.
Oh.
So we were, I drive her to school every day because it's on my way to work.
Hmm.
And, she said, Mom, why does it bother some people if somebody is gay or lesbian?
Hmm.
And I said, I don't know. I said, it doesn't really make any sense to me because it doesn't say anything about somebody's character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we should, you know, you make your judgments about people based on their character, and whether somebody's gay or straight has nothing to do with what kind of a person they are. So I don't really understand why that matters to people.
Mm.
And she said, well, I just think it's really sad that some kids can't tell their parents if they're not straight because their parents won't accept them. And I said, I agree. I think that's really sad. And she said, I mean, I'm not straight and none of my friends mind.
Aww.
And I said, you don't think you're straight? And she said, no. And I said, oh. And then she proceeded to tell me about the girl she had a crush on.
Aww.
And, you know, so it wasn't even like coming out.
Yeah.
It wasn't, "Mom, I have to tell you something," or it was just part of, you know, she was making a point about it's not right for parents to not love their kids anymore just because they're gay.
Mm-hmm.
And she had already told some of her friends. Mm-hmm. And all her friends know, and none of them cares. And so, yeah, I was really proud of that.
That because she
didn't feel like she had, she didn't feel like she had anything to, and, you know, if a year later she does seem, you know, and I thought, you know, maybe it's just not that, that whole issue is not particularly relevant at that mm-hmm. age.
Right.
So I thought, you know, maybe it'll change, maybe it won't, doesn't matter. Either way, it's kind of irrelevant. But she seems pretty certain. She has a kind of a crush on one of her friends who's a very nice girl. And I said, "Do you know if she's, you know, is she a lesbian?" And she said, "I don't know." And I said, "Well, will it bother you? It, you know, if you find out that she's not?" She said, "No, because we're still friends."
Oh,
well, there you go.
Oh my gosh.
So, I mean, yeah, she's
crazy. That the language that you use with her, right? You're leading with love. You're listening to her. You're believing in her. You're letting her know that you love her. And obviously, you, up until that point that she had that conversation, she knew, regardless of what she shared about who she was, that you would love her unconditionally, right? Like, she just knew that that's who you were, and felt free to be able to express her opinions and her desires.
Yeah, I have to admit, I felt really good about that.
Yeah, and you should, girlfriend, you should.
We have a really good relationship, and we've worked really hard on it. You know, she experienced trauma when she was in kindergarten. And so we started therapy with her at the beginning of first grade, and she just finally stopped going at the end of fifth grade. So, you know, 4.5 years of her and me together at least once a week. And for about a year, sometimes I would go in twice a week by myself and once with her.
Yeah.
But usually it was once by myself and once with her. So, you know, and that was just so tremendously helpful, not only for her in getting treatment for her PTSD and, you know, being able to work through that. But also, we have such a great therapist, and, you know, she really helped me understand what to look for. So, through that process of healing from her trauma, I learned, because I had to be really deliberate about watching her for behavior changes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes, you know, as a mom, I'm sure, you know, sometimes you're not sure, like, is this the trauma? Is this anxiety? Or is this just her being a 6-year-old?
Yeah.
You know, so how much of this is just typical behavior and how much of this is something else? So sometimes you really have to bite back your instincts to say, "What the hell? I've told you this 5 times. And then to, like, take a deep breath and sit down and say, "You don't seem like yourself tonight.
Yeah.
Is there something you would like to talk about?"
Oh, gosh.
And, like, that was a really hard thing to learn. You know, when you're frustrated and you're tired and you're frazzled, you're getting ready for work the next day. And so I had to learn how to do that. And so through that process, she and I figured each other out a lot. So we can read each other really well. And I think that that's, you know, I would never say I'm grateful that she had trauma. But the process of healing from that really taught us a lot about ourselves and about each other. Wow. And so I think that's part of the foundation of our relationship. And also, you know, kids need to know, especially kids who've been victims of trauma, but kids need to know that the adults in their lives will protect them.
Yes. Like
that's one of the most important things for kids, especially kids who have experienced trauma. They need to, and the younger they are, the more important this is. They need to know, because if they don't think you're going to protect them, if they don't think the adults will protect them, why should they tell anybody?
Yeah.
There's no point telling anybody.
No.
If they're just going to disclose something and get punished for it, or they can't disclose because they don't have the language for it. So they, the only thing, the way they have to process it is through their behavior and they get punished for it. So if the adults are not going to protect them, they're never going to tell you what's going on.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So that's just a really, really important aspect. And so I have made super sure that she knows that no matter what happens, you know, anything that's going to get to you has to go through me.
Yeah.
So, because I want to make sure that she always feels safe, you know, and now it's middle school and pretty soon it will be high school.
Right.
And, you know, as she gets older, the stakes get higher. And so, you know, you need to start cultivating that at a young age.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that we were able to learn through, you know, through that process.
Yeah. Wow.
I am definitely proud of the connection that we have, that she felt like she could just, it was just on her mind and then it just came out and she never thought twice about it. And I also, for her maturity in recognizing that this has nothing to do with the kind of person somebody is.
Right.
You know, how it's a part, it's just a small part of the whole.
Yeah.
So, I was really proud of her.
Yeah. And you should be proud of yourself, because whatever it was that you and your hubby, right, the environment that you guys set up in your home to make her feel safe, to know that she was loved unconditionally, and to understand that you guys were going to fight for her, you know, regardless, come what may. So kudos to you two as well, because you guys played a big part in making her feel comfortable and providing her with a safe space in order for her. Yeah. I just recently had a conversation with a dear friend of mine. We were talking trauma, unfortunately, and the subsequent traumas that have occurred in our personal lives and the lives of our children. And one of my children experienced extreme trauma around the age of 10-ish. And I was the mom that fought on her behalf, right? Mm-hmm. I went to battle for her, and I believed her, and I listened to her, and I trusted her, and I validated her. And my friend did not have that same experience with her mom and her dad. And so she was just validating me, like, you know, just saying, Leah, like, thank you for being there for her, for giving her what she needed at the time, for believing her, for loving her, for listening to her, for going to battle for her, because my mom was unable to do that for me. And here I am, you know, 30 years later, still trying to deal with the fallout and handle and learn how to handle the PTSD from that experience. And I think those of us, for whatever reason, I don't know why in my life I was able, right, to stand up for what was right at that time, you know, compared to my parents' generation, when those same sorts of wrongs were experienced, they were unable to do what was right in those particular situations, right? I don't know why I had what I had to do what it took to be able to be that advocate for my child. And I don't know if you know why you were able, it seems so obvious, right? My child has experienced a trauma. I'm going to do whatever I can do within my power to make her feel whatever, right? Validated. I'm going to believe her. I'm going to listen to her. Do you have any insights into what it was about you as a human being, you and your personality, that you were able to take that trauma that she experienced at a young age and be able to become her advocate and to fight on her behalf? And then in turn to have this 4.5 years of therapy that enabled her to be able to have this beautifully comfortable relationship with you, to be able to just be free to share who she was at the deepest level.
Well, first of all, I'm very sorry that happened to your daughter, and good for you and for her, for you fighting for her. It's not easy.
Yeah.
And especially when there are people who would much rather you be pleasant and get along.
Right.
It can be really difficult. So, you know, you should be proud of yourself for that. I have to word this really carefully, because if I choose the wrong words, I'm going to get choked up. I don't want to do that. I want my daughter to look back at her life and say, nobody ever loved me the way my mother loved me.
Aww.
I want her to look back and say, you know, no matter what else she ever experiences and what kinds of love with friends or with partners or spouses, I want her to see our relationship. I want her to feel like, you know, even if I was never enough for anybody else, I was always enough for mom. Mm-hmm. I was always the best for her. I want her to know that she is worth somebody going out of their way for.
Yeah.
Not, I love you until it costs me something.
Right.
Because that is the kind of love I have experienced in my own life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I can't control what anybody else is ever going to give her, but right. I can give her that.
Yeah.
That
right. Right.
It's not just, I love you until it costs me something. It's,
yeah.
It's knowing that she is worth, you know, the saying, you know, love isn't a feeling, it's an act.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because at the end of the day, how somebody feels about you means nothing. When that person mm-hmm. is suffering and they need something, well, yeah, but I feel like I love you. Well, I don't mm-hmm. need your feelings. I need your help. I need your support. I need your guidance. I need your arms around me. I need, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And so I want her to know that even if nobody else was ever willing to pay the cost, it's, you know, her well-being is worth whatever it costs me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I want her to know that. I don't want her to ever doubt that.
Right.
And that's what motivates me.
Yeah. And oh my gosh, Tracy, like what that says to a child, right? We can't even, it's like priceless, right? We can't even place a cost on it, right? For a child to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that they are worthy, that they are worth fighting for, that they are valuable, right? Like it just seems like a no-brainer, right? Of course, we as mothers are going to love our children in such a way that makes them and enables them to feel so. right? But so there's something, it's interesting, right? Like for our generation, I would love to be able to study the psychology behind or the whys behind why some of us in our generation have that power. Or, I mean, I feel like it's a powerful tool, a powerful, whatever it is about our personalities to be able to do the hard thing and to fight on behalf of our children, to stand up for what is right at all costs. Right. And just like all your advocacy, right, with feminism and fighting patriarchy and misogyny and standing up for what is right and wanting a better world for your daughter. Right. Whereas maybe our parents' generation, right, I think of my own mother and the struggles that she has had in speaking up for what is right for whatever reasons. Right. I don't know why I can't place I can't put words to the reasons why you could or you would fail to fight on behalf of your child, right? Like, I don't get it. My mind cannot even fathom a situation that you would not be able to do that. But I'm grateful, right? I'm grateful for you and I'm grateful for me and whatever it is about us that made us, whatever our parents were able to build in to us, whatever our life experiences were able to be built into us, that we were the sorts of parents that were able to stand by and be that advocate on behalf of our children when they were at their most vulnerable, right? That's an area, right, that I would love to dive deep into and study the psychology behind and the research behind and the evidence behind why. Some of us can do that and others
that's
of us.
Really, it's yeah. A really interesting question. And I may bring it up with the therapist because I have continued to go to her because I can go to her. She's a family therapist and I can go to her and say, even though my daughter was like, no, she because she wants to avoid it. You know, the thing about therapy is that you have to talk about stuff that makes you uncomfortable in order to process it and find, you know, to come up with coping strategies. But that means you have to talk about it.
Right.
You know, so you have to endure a period of perhaps higher anxiety in order to, you know, be able to deal more productively with your anxiety over time.
Right.
And that's a really hard concept to explain to a 10-year-old.
Exactly. Yes.
So I go and I've gotten her permission. I said, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to talk to her about what's going on with you and tell her the things that you're up to and the things that you say so that she can give me strategies for helping to support you better. Are you comfortable with that? And she said, yep, you can tell her anything you want to about me. I just don't want to go.
Oh my God.
So, you know, I made sure she knew that I was going to talk to her. So I do that. And it's still quite helpful.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I can imagine it must be. Yeah.
That would be an interesting question to raise with her is why, you know, because she'll share with me some information about how, you know, some parents deal with this way and, some parents deal with this and, you know, this is really common and this is really uncommon. There are certain things that there are still parents who really just want to, when their child has experienced trauma, which is her specialty, is treating kids with trauma, who really just want to look the other way.
Right.
Who really want to remain in denial for whatever reason. Sometimes it's for appearances. Sometimes it's because there's family politics and I just can't even, I can't get my head around it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, why would you want to stay in denial?
Yeah.
Like, why would you want to pretend something that you know has happened hasn't happened because you already know what's happened?
Yeah.
You can't unknow it.
Right.
Makes no sense to me. And your child will be the one to pay the price.
Yeah. I tell you, like, I feel like, you know, the ability of those in our generation to be able to do that hard thing for whatever reason, right? We don't know why, but to feed into our children, right? To give them that confidence, that strong foundation, to know that they are loved unconditionally and that there are people like you and I looking out for them and fighting for them. Like, I don't think we can even begin to estimate like what that's going to bring to the world, to society, right? Because as women, even think about our girls as women, Tracy, mm-hmm. right? Like the strength that they have and the confidence that they bring into, that they are bringing to the table, right? Like it's a game changer. And yeah. I don't know how it's going to play out, but I feel like you and I and others like us, like we are a part, we are a piece of changing society for the better, where we have a bigger voice as women, and we're not going to stand up for the bullshit anymore. And like, can you even imagine, like we have this sweet little beautiful one-year-old child in our humanist community here in Cincinnati, and this child is just loved beyond measure. Right? Like everyone in our community just adores her. She's the cutest damn thing you've ever seen. And like, she knows it. Like we're out to lunch after our morning gatherings and she's like waving at all the waiters, like, "Hey, did you notice me?" And waving to all the other patrons, like, "Hey, I'm here. Like, aren't I awesome? Aren't I cute? Like, you didn't say hey to me." And like, there's this beautiful confidence when we are built into as young children and believed and listened to and valued, that I can't imagine what that's going to look like on the other end, right? When these women, your daughter, my daughters, this particular young girl who's one, this, right? Like what that's going to do to society. Like I fully believe and I hope it to be true.
I think I could not agree with you more. I think you are mm-hmm. so right. I think if I had to narrow down the source of all of the world's problems mm-hmm. to one cause, it's bad parenting.
Mm-hmm.
If we could get one generation of parents, one generation of parents to raise their kids, no spanking, no violence, no yeah. screaming, no threats right. with, and you know, people think that, you know, teaching your child that they are loved and protected and cherished and valued and special, like you can teach your kid that and also teach them how to be kind and compassionate mm-hmm. and humble. And yes. you don't, it's not about spoiling kids and letting them run, you know, go feral. You don't have to, it's, you know, the choices are you're either a Nazi or your child has no boundaries whatsoever.
Right. Right.
You can teach your child that they are the most, that nobody has ever loved a child more than I love you, and I am here for you, and you are special, and you are smart, and you are talented, and you can do anything you set your mind to, and I will support you as long as you do your best. And you can teach them all of that, but they can still be kind and funny yeah. and creative and generous. And one generation.
Yeah.
And then when they raise their kids, the next generation, they'll have worked out the kinks.
Yeah.
So we could dismantle patriarchy.
Woo-hoo!
We could, you know, fix, you know, I don't want to say necessary. We might not be able to dismantle capitalism, but we mm-hmm. could solve a lot of the problems of capitalism.
Yes.
We could solve a lot of there's just so many, you know, people say, "Well, I was spanked and I turned out fine." No, you didn't. I guarantee you didn't. If you think that spanking your own kid is okay, then that in itself is evidence that you didn't turn yeah. out fine.
Right.
You know, like break the cycle, people.
Yeah.
You know, people, if we could just get one generation to mostly yeah. get it right.
Right.
And so that we could have a generation of kids grow up who actually have healthy coping mechanisms.
Yeah.
Who can oh, talk God. About how they feel and process their anxiety without, say, turning to, you know, self-medication, without turning to violence, without right. feeling like they need to dominate other people without harming themselves. You know, to tap it, to give them the confidence to tap into their full creative potential. How many people, how many Einsteins and Billie Holidays, and how many people like that have we never ever shared their talent and their gifts with the world because they just didn't believe they could do it. They didn't believe in themselves.
Right.
And it sounds so trite, but I really believe if we could just raise kids the right way.
Yeah.
And it sounds so, you know, it's, you know, that's what religious people say, you know,
yeah.
Raise kids the right way, raise in the church. But what I mean is love your friggin' kids, you know,
yeah.
Show them love. Don't, you know, don't confuse obedience for respect.
Yeah.
You know, you might have a kid who is a straight A student and never talks back, but that kid might be sneaking into the bathroom and cutting herself with a razor blade.
Right. Right.
You know, that matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, I think what you're saying is absolutely spot on. The more kids we can empower to have confidence in themselves and to have healthy coping skills, because they know they have a safe place to land with at least one person. I just think that can make a huge impact.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And then like the piece of us as parents, right? Like I think so often in society, like there's not a whole lot of kudos given to like people who are willing to sacrifice. Like here you are, Tracy, right? Like you were sharing with me earlier before we started recording about your job situation, right? That you're not trying to climb the corporate ladder, that you're content right now in your position, just going to work, doing a good job, and then going home at the end of the day so that you can give to your husband and to your child, right? What they need. And like that's a beautiful thing. That like the amount of time and energy that we put into developing quality human beings who happen to be our children, right? Biologically or adopted or whatever, like that is a game changer, right? And that is valuable. And unfortunately, it seems like in society today that that's not necessarily given a lot of value, right? But you and I, right? And people like us, we need to remind ourselves and remind each other. I mean, I believe that is probably the best currency that we can offer to society, right? Is like putting that time and energy and effort and hard work and sacrifice into our children, right?
I completely agree. And, you know, parenthood isn't for everybody. You know, if women don't want to be mothers all of those choices are completely legitimate. What bothers me is to see any kind of us versus them. Like well, what I do is more important. No, what
right.
I do is more important.
Right.
I think that if you do have children, then you have a moral obligation to raise them the best way you possibly can.
Right.
And if you have the privilege, like I recognize it is huge privilege for me to have been able to walk away from a career and take a lower paying job to reduce hours and to reduce stress and have more time and emotional energy to focus on my child. So I realize not everybody has that privilege, but I do. And so I feel like I have a responsibility to use that wisely.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't mean that in a way that I'm trying to judge anybody else.
Right. Right.
But you know, it's not something that can be half-assed.
Right. Right. There's this beautiful quote by Maya Angelou, and I'm sure I'm going to not say it well, but it's something like, people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did. Okay, so I'm thinking about our children here. Our children may forget what we said. Our children may forget what we did, but our children will never, ever forget how we made them feel, right?
Exactly.
And, that's so true. And yeah. And it's an investment that's worthwhile. And we don't necessarily, like, here I have all young adult children, right? Like I've got an 18-year-old, a 21-year-old, and a 23-year-old. And there are days and there are weeks and there are months where I feel like, what the fuck did I do? Like, no, like, they don't want to talk to me. They think I'm an idiot. They think I have no sense. But then there are other days and weeks and months where I know that the time that I invested in them and the way that I made them feel will forever be wrapped around their sweet little hearts and sweet little souls, and that they will be comforted, right? And they may not even necessarily know that it was a parenting piece, right? Mm-hmm. Like confidence that they may exude or whatever it might be. But yeah, like it's a worthwhile endeavor to invest in our children.
It really is. And I want to clarify that I do not think that women have to be stay-at-home moms in order to be good moms or work part-time. I don't mean that at all.
Yeah, me neither.
There
me
are
neither.
Single moms who work multiple jobs, who raise multiple kids and do a fantastic job.
Yeah.
And you can be a stay-at-home mom and, you know, toddlers and tiaras, you know, that and do that kind of thing. And I just watched a video on YouTube about that with my kid the other day. So that's why that came to me. You know, and you could be a stay-at-home parent and not do right by your kids.
Yeah.
So I don't want to imply that I think there's a one way to do it. I think what matters is, like you said, what matters is how you make them feel.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a stay-at-home mom to make sure that your kids know that you love them and you will fight for them.
Yeah.
And that they can trust you.
Yeah.
Agreed. So, but yeah, I do not think that the contribution of raising ethical, intelligent, creative, compassionate, well-adjusted children, I don't think the value of that can be overstated.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you for that clarification. Thank you. So that leads me into our current political climate. You know, I just think about our kids. I know. Like, so my youngest is able to vote this year for the first time. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're having conversations about the candidates and the future of our democracy, right? Like,
right.
It's a little bit scary right now. So what are your views of the current political climate today, January 2020?
I think most people think that my views are a little off the deep end and alarmist. And this is one of those situations where I would love to be wrong. I hope that I am wrong. I don't think I am wrong, but I would love to be wrong. I predict that the election will either be hopelessly rigged by foreign interference and influence, at voter suppression, and the Electoral College, and that if that doesn't work, I don't think we can assume that the election won't be canceled or quote unquote postponed outright. We have to stop assuming that there is a line that they won't cross.
Right.
Because there isn't. There is no line that Donald Trump and the Republicans in Congress will not cross. There is no bottom. So if the election happens, I think he will come out as the winner, regardless of what people actually want, either through gerrymandering and foreign interference, or outright cheating, or the Electoral College. And if by some reason, by some miracle, quote unquote, for want of a better word, by some miracle, he does not win, I do not believe he will voluntarily vacate the Oval Office in January.
Yeah.
Oh. Everybody says, oh, it's so irresponsible for him to talk about civil war and for people to mention civil war. But there are a lot of people out there with a lot of guns. And if he said it's time to pick up your weapons and start shooting liberals, they will happily comply. So I think we're in for some really dark times. And I think the closer the election gets, the more brazen he will get. Because we've just seen him, we've seen that brazenness just get worse and worse and worse and worse over the course of the last 3 years. So I honestly do not believe that there is a line that they will not cross.
Yeah. Have you been following the Senate impeachment trials at all the last week or so, week or two?
I have been reading the highlights, but I have to be honest that I can't. honestly, I can't handle it. It is so... it's so frightening and it's so outrageous, and I feel like the worst part of it is that it's futile. And so I feel like if I get sucked into all of the details of the absolutely ridiculous arguments that they're making and the hypocrisy and the lies and the falsehoods and the inaccuracies, only to have it all come to nothing, that's all of the blood boiling, teeth gnashing will have been for nothing. And I can't put myself through it.
Yeah, I'm with you, girl. I followed quite a bit of the trial in the House. But knowing the state of the Senate, right, and the numbers in the Senate, it's very difficult for me to put any time or energy into following it. And like, I'm a politically interested, active person. And I think if I'm feeling this way, right, oh my gosh, how is the rest of the population feeling right now?
People are so fatigued by it.
No,
it's exhausting.
Yes. Yes. So do you and your daughter have conversation about the current political climate? Are you guys talking about Trump and about the impeachment trials and what's going on?
We do a little bit. Her father and I are not politically aligned, which, 16 years ago wasn't that big a deal. It was sort of that, it's just politics, we can disagree on politics. But that all looks and feels really different now, and it certainly started to feel different after we had a child. But then especially once Trump was elected, it's like, no, there is no such thing as it's just politics,
right?
That's a real sign of privilege. I will freely admit that I am, rolling around in privilege. I'm white. I'm straight.
Me too.
Affluent. I get it. So I try to be as aware as possible. So I have to be a little bit more guarded about the things that I say. But when it comes to Donald Trump, I just tell the truth. He's dishonest. He has sexually assaulted women. He does not have respect for women. He is racist. He has said terrible things about Black people and about Hispanic people and
disabled
about
people.
Native American people and right about disabled people. He's mean. He is unintelligent. He doesn't write well. He doesn't speak well. He doesn't speak properly. He doesn't read books. He's mean. He's not a good person. And so I'm just honest. I'm not going off and saying, spouting all kinds of, liberal ideology. I'm just that is just the truth. He's not a good person. And so she hears that stuff from her friends and her friends' parents as well. So it's not just me.
You're not the only one.
He doesn't like Trump either.
Okay.
I do want to clarify that. He doesn't like Trump either. So we do talk about it. And the other thing that makes me guarded is that I don't want to be, as direct with her about the state of the world.
Yes.
That's one thing where I don't want to be completely honest with her about my feelings, because I think that her generation, your kids and mine, I think they're going to have a really tough time.
Yeah.
Even if the Democrats sweep the Senate and he gets, and he gets kicked out of office and we have a Democrat a year from now, we're a generation right now into undoing the damage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right now we're a generation, because when you factor in, the federal courts, we're already, and the damage he's done to our relationships overseas and our reputation, we're already a generation into it.
Yeah. Good point.
And so, I think, how is she ever going to get a job? How is she ever going to move out on her own? How is she, what is the climate going to be like? If she ever got pregnant, which, is probably unlikely, but you never know, she may not date men, but that doesn't mean she can't still get assaulted if that happened. Right. Would she be able to get an abortion?
Yeah.
I just think that our kids are going to grow up in a really different world than we did.
Yeah. I tell you,
and I think your grandchildren, our grandchildren, are going to have it even harder.
Yeah.
I've said to my husband, I said, we are the first generation who is raising kids who will be worse off than we were.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
Economically. Yeah,
it's a sad state.
And it's scary. And, what we can do is so limited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like we have no, our voices don't necessarily matter. The ability to make change, right, as an individual.
Yeah.
I mean, again, hate to be so discouraging and like pessimistic, but it's kind of like, what does it, I mean, I'm in here in Ohio, right? And Ohio is a swing state. And a number of my friends in my humanist community, we probably have 2, 4, 6, 7, maybe 9 people who have moved here from California, Colorado, states that maybe typically always go Democratic, right? They've moved here to Ohio. One of the reasons being that they could possibly be a voice for sanity, right? And voting progressive agendas and voting Democratic candidates into office. And yet Ohio's really a sad state of affairs today. In Cincinnati alone, I think there's been at least, 3 Planned Parenthood clinics that have closed in the last year. And things are not looking good here in Ohio. And it's discouraging for me as a woman, right? Middle-aged woman, for my daughters as young adults. Mm-hmm. And one of my girls, utilized Planned Parenthood services before they closed down. She went to a clinic that was still open in 20 early 2019 to have some STD testing. And that clinic is now currently closed, right? Like there is one other clinic in the area that is still open, but there were a plethora of choices a year ago today. So it's pretty discouraging here in Ohio, the state of affairs. So I'm with you. So let's look at the current Democratic candidates, young lady. Is there anyone or more than one person that you're excited about that you think could potentially bring about change at the national level if they could get elected?
I gotta be honest, I'm not super crazy about any of them. I mean, there's not one of them that lights my hair on fire. There are some, and I'm gonna be obnoxious and not name names. There are some that I really strongly dislike.
Yeah, me too.
There are some I strongly dislike. And there's nobody who, you know, sort of makes me swoon. But that's just not the, you know, nobody's ever going to make you swoon. And a lot, I think too many people are using that as the standard, you know, well, yeah. So-and-so didn't make me swoon, so I just, right. You know, I abstained or I voted third party or whatever. Yeah. Well, thank you. You know, Donald Trump thanks you. So, you know, I'm definitely a vote blue no matter who kind of girl. Because if you can debate the value and the efficacy of a two-party system all day long, but at the end of the day, that's what we have. Yeah. You know, right now that's what we have. That's not saying that we shouldn't try to change it. But, you know, the way to change that is, you know, I read an article about this back in 2016 that said, you know, the way to create a three-party system is not to trot out the reanimated corpse of Ralph Nader every 4 years. You know, like, you know, these vanity candidacies, you know, build it from the ground up. Start running third party candidates for mayor and for city council and for dog catcher and for you know, for that stuff. Build it, you know, build a foundation as opposed to, you know, thinking that somebody is going to run for the, you know, leader of the free world who's completely unqualified. You know, it just doesn't work. I will vote for whoever the Democrat is.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think there are some, and I will also say, you know, they're all playing the game, and people are saying, you know, well, we want to hear about policy, and we want to hear about your big ideas. And if a Democrat actually wins and ends up in the Oval Office, they're going to spend their entire first term trying to fix what Trump broke.
Yes.
There isn't going to be any sweeping policy change. Right. There isn't going to be any Medicare for all. There isn't going to be any, we're going to end homelessness. That's just not going to happen because not only there's so much broken. Think about the dozens and dozens of high level positions within, you know, within the government and all of these agencies that are sitting vacant.
Yeah.
Or that all of the career bureaucrats have resigned, taking decades of experience with them. So there's nobody who knows what they're doing running these agencies. I mean, we've broken the government in such a fundamental way.
Yeah.
There's not going to be any sweeping change, whoever it is. And people who say, oh, we want to hear your grand ideas. Well, grand ideas are great, but no one's going to say, okay, we're going to let that fire keep burning while we launch, you know, while we start building bullet trains. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
They've got to fix what's broken.
Yeah. I mean, our local humanist group, like this Saturday, we're doing a voter registration push. You know, here in Ohio, the deadline mm-hmm. to register for the primary is like coming up, right? It's like February 17th or something. So we're going out into our local communities here, meeting up and going out to our local, actually near the University of Cincinnati, and trying to just register people to vote who are not registered. And knowing that studies show that if we can get more people to vote, chances are that the results will be a more progressive agenda, right? That those yep. who aren't registered are will probably vote progressively in nature.
Yeah.
And so it's exciting, you know, like there's a number of us that are can't wait to get together on Saturday and get out there and make the push happen. But on the other hand, there's a number of people that are so disillusioned by the state of our democracy that they're like, why bother? It doesn't make a difference what I do, whether I vote or do not vote, or encourage somebody else to register to vote so that they can vote. What's the point? And there's something about actually our conversation, our TED Talk-like conversation we had in our humanist community gathering on Sunday talked about just that, right? Like we need to preserve our democracy. Like we need to get out there and vote because our democracy is at risk.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so like, what does that mean? Right. Like, so what? Like, I think there's so many people in our society that they don't even necessarily know what a big deal it is to have a democracy where we are free to vote as we please. Right. That we have those freedoms here. And, I don't know, there's like this uneducated population. I feel like it's getting worse in one respect. And even me, who is and has been hugely involved in the political environment here in Ohio, like I am depressed when I start thinking about the state of affairs in my state and in my country. And that's me. And I'm like an eternal optimist, you know, Tracy. And so I can only imagine how those around me must feel in my community and those around me in my family must feel. And so, yeah, I too am concerned about.
I think it's so great that you're doing that, because that is, you know, when I said earlier that, you know, the tools that are available to us as individuals are so limited, but that's yeah. one of them.
Hmm.
That's one of them, helping people to register to vote, driving people to the polls, you know, going to the polls for the primaries and for the election, you know, calling your senator. There's an app called I think it's called Five Calls.
Yeah.
That helps you. It tells you who all your representatives and senators are, and links, so you can just press the link and it'll call their office, and you can choose from a list of topics what you want to talk to them about. And of course, you just get a recording, and it gives you a little script for what you can say in your message. I am calling to talk to, you know, Senator so-and-so about, you know, the name of such and such a bill. And I oppose that bill for this reason, or, you know, I'm calling to let Senator so-and-so know that I really think that, you know, the Senate needs to allow witnesses in the impeachment mm-hmm. trial, you know, so it's quite helpful. But, you know, those are the limited tools that are available. None of them is particularly costly. You know, they're not difficult. It's, you know, call your congresspeople and your senators, call your local, you know, your local representatives, your state representatives, and register to vote. Because, you know, that's all we have. So I think it's really great that you're doing that.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. It's kind of like our first big community push that we're doing as a humanist organization. And so we're not anticipating that the turnout's going to be huge, but those of us that are planning to attend are so fucking excited, you know? Like, we care about this and we want to preserve our democracy, and let's do our part, right? As small as it might be, and is as insignificant as it might be on the end game, It's exciting.
Yeah, right.
It's
exciting. Well, it's insignificant for one person, but when 50 million people do the same insignificant thing, it can become significant.
Amen, sister. Amen. Okay. So I am looking at our time and I want to bring us to a close here because I feel like you and I are two women that could talk forever.
Probably could.
For hours. And so in respect of your time and let's just kind of draw to a close here. And in closing, I would like to thank you for your time and your wisdom and the sharing of your life with us. And I'd like to kind of finish out with just kind of asking you, what are some of the things that you and your hubby, you and your daughter do for fun to kind of re-energize yourselves and bring about hope and peace and the ability to kind of go on and fight the good fight?
Oh, let's see. I think for me, I've talked enough about the parenting thing, but I'm a big believer in the fact that, in the idea that art can change the world and that we all can do art in our own way. I read something the other day and I thought it was so brilliant that, you don't have to be good at something in order to enjoy it and to express yourself in an artistic way. Maybe you like doing coloring, those adult coloring books with, with some new markers or you like to sing, but you're not any good at it. It doesn't matter. That's still art, and it's that way of connecting you to that part of being human that can't be quantified. If that makes sense, it's not about making money, or it's not about your schedule or your education or any of that. It's just about that connection to sort of your soul, for want of a better word, that piece of you that needs to come out. And I think that that's really healthy. And so I have some, my therapist tells me I should call it art. I struggle to call it art, but she says it's definitely art. I've taken up photography, amateur photography. And I've recently gotten into macro photography, which is just so much fun. And I could, it's tougher here in the winter, but, in the summertime, I used to be terrified of insects, and now they're my favorite subject. I love taking macro photographs of, especially bees. Bees are my favorite.
My gosh.
But I love taking pictures of them. And then I'll just roam around my yard and take pictures of everything. And it's amazing to see just the intricacy and the beauty in things that are right there in your yard that you don't look at. And now you have this new way of looking at it. And so for me, it's kind of mindfulness for one thing, to be out there taking the pictures. But then I'll come in and look at the pictures and I'll say, well, I don't know what kind of weed this is. And I try to find out what kind of weed it is, or I don't know what kind of bug this is. And so I look up because I want to know what it is, and I learn a little bit. But also it's like, wow, this insect is so beautiful. Look at the colors. Oh, and it was right there in my yard and I didn't even know, so it's kind of regenerative for me in that sense. And I also make jewelry, which is really fun. And this is the year I'm finally going to open my Etsy shop.
Do share that link with us, please.
I don't have it yet. I'm still building up the inventory, but I am going to do that this year. And actually, my daughter is also a gifted artist. She's an illustrator. And so she likes to do, she does a lot of drawing. And she also wants to open an Etsy shop. So I told her I would do the business side of it for her.
Wow.
But she wants to sell her drawings.
So cool. And what sort of drawings does she do?
She likes to draw mostly animals. She loves to draw. She can draw very realistic wolves. They're quite stunning, especially considering, like, you look at it and think this kid is 11, which I can't even draw stick people. And but she also really loves designing, this is gonna sound funny, but like furry suits, like people who go to like furry conventions. They're like, everybody looks like a giant stuffed animal. And she just thinks that's really cool. And so she wants to do commissions to, like, design furry costumes. So not actually building them, but to be able to have somebody express, you know, I want it to be a wolf, and I want it to be blue, and I want it to have green eyes, and, you know, this. And then she wants to design it so that person can take the design and then have something made. So she wants to do that. She's really interested in that. I think art is a big part of how we decompress and reconnect with ourselves.
That's so good. I mean, between art and music, right, another form of art, and nature, I mean,
I sing, you know, I have
you do, Tracy?
It's embarrassing. I shouldn't even admit it. It's silly. But I sang all as I was growing up, and I sang in my college choir, and I've missed singing. I haven't sung in a choir in, you know, 25 years, and I've missed it, but I have a karaoke app on my phone, and it's like karaoke social media. And then they have a huge library, and it's really fun. It's just really fun to be able to hook up to something and just belt it out. And like, that can be also really therapeutic.
Definitely. I'm like as we've been talking, I've just been thinking and feeling like you're like, you know, like a spiritual sister from like another mother kind of a thing.
Aww.
And like, I'm thinking of, you know, like one of my favorite songs, it's kind of lame, I know, but is like John Lennon's Imagine, right?
Uh-huh.
And like, I mean, karaoke, imagine all the people living life and peace, you, like, I love to sing, but I'm a really shitty singer.
Oh, great.
The karaoke app.
You don't have to be good at something. If you enjoy it and it feels good, then just you should.
Okay, I'm gonna download that as soon as we're finished. Karaoke.
It's called
app.
Sing.
Okay, I can do that. I can do that.
And it's just a hoot. It's really fun, and you can do duets. You can do duets. Yeah. So like I'll do duets with myself.
Oh, so you can
so you can like sing one part and then you go back and sing the other part.
Oh my gosh. I'm not already love.
It's wicked fun. And yeah, I am that square.
That is too much fun. Me too. Me too. But you know, that's okay.
It's part of my charm.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So Tracy, I want to thank you so much for being willing to.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's just lovely to talk to you. And I'm humbled by all of your kind words, and I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I want to thank you for being such a badass mom and for building into your daughter and for making this world a better place. And if you could share with us again how people can get in touch with you if they'd like to via your blog and your Facebook and Instagram.
Yeah, I am on Facebook. I'm a Godless Mama on Facebook. I do have a blog, but I haven't written in about a year, I keep saying I'm going to write more, and I haven't, but I do have a blog at godlessmama.com.
Okay. And what you have there is fabulous.
Well, thank you.
I appreciate your wisdom and your ability to just kind of put to words what I think many of us are thinking but have difficulty articulating. So is there anything that we did not touch on that you would like to share before we say goodbye?
I think I'm good. Our conversation, I think, flowed really naturally, you have a knack for guiding the conversation. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you. I thank you for your patience with me, and it's been an extreme pleasure, and I look forward to continuing our friendship. Online
too.
And hopefully someday we'll be able to actually meet in person.
We'll go get that pedicure.
We'll get that pedicure and with some wine, with a glass of wine.
That's right.
You like red or white? Do you have a preference?
I tend to prefer white, but I'll drink whatever's
okay.
Put in front of
whatever
me.
I bring will be okay. Okay. All right. Well, young lady, thank you so much, and you have a pleasant evening and a
all
good
right,
night.
You take care.
And I wish you all the best.
All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Peace. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on Women Beyond Faith, where we are finding freedom on the other side, one story at a time.